Blog Talk Radio.
All right, then. I believe we're on the air. Yes, you are. Well, fantastic. Fantastic. There was some kind of technical problem Blog Talk was having, but looks like we're on. So, in that case, greetings, everyone. Yes, greetings. Another day in paradise. Welcome to another day in paradise. God has blessed us so much. All right, you listen to Nazim Rashid. Nazim Rashid. Yes, I'm the author of the a self-help book called Reconnected, How to Be Mentor to Our Child Self. How to Be Mentor to Our Child Self. Mm-hmm. And I always like to do a beginning intro, so sometimes, you know, people have not heard the series before, all right? So I started out, Imam Alfred Muhammad gave me this slot because he bought my book and said changed his life. So he says, brother, why don't you have the Wednesday slot and just kind of do it, just throw down. So I start with a series on addiction and recovery. Addiction and recovery. We handle that, and all based on the book Reconnected. And after that, we start a series on marriages, committed relationships, marriages. All right. And this is our 12th installment so far, based on again on the book Reconnected, How to Be Mentor to Your Child Self. All right. So we've been going through this and. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. Yeah, you know, a couple of people actually, you know, bought the book and they're you know, enjoying that. So I appreciate that. Now you can get this on ebook if you have a Kindle or a Nook through Amazon or Barnes and Noble. They also have the paperback version there, and you can get it there anytime. And you can also go to my site after the three W's we have clouds. Of abundance.com, cloudsofabundance.com, again, cloudsofabundance.com. Yeah, and I can actually sign it and mail it to you personally. Okay, now when you go there, if you choose to get it that way, please email me at nrbookclub@gmail.com. Again, nrbookclub@gmail.com, because there was one order that came through. And I didn't know it even came through. PayPal, I just forgot to send me an email. So a whole month went by before I knew that this brother out of Virginia had even bought the book. So I had to send him an apology for sure. All right, that's okay. All right, get it. Real important. Human manual for the transformation of your negative experiences to positive memories, loving yourself at deep levels, and becoming the co-creator of your life, creating the life you've always desired. Okay? All right. I'll go through the chapters, and these are also the stages of development you have to go through if you want to become that mentor. Go back in time and become a mentor to the self you once were. That's what I mean when I say child self, young self you used to be. All right? First is forgiveness. Then we have validation. After that, self-esteem. Then visualization. Then we have self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, attachments, codependency, and addictions. We're going to talk about that today. 12 principles of recovery. Identifying and managing emotions. In the last chapter, how to be the mentor to your child self. Yeah. There's no other book like this on the market. This falls into the inner child category. But there's no category called child self. I created that. Yeah. So inner child is wonderful, and your child self has the inner child. But when I say child self, I'm talking about the flesh and blood, little one that used to be. That's why I tell my clients to get those little pictures when you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, where you're looking right into the camera. Cut those out and put those right on your computer monitor on your wall so you can see it every day and send love into those little eyes. Yeah, that's how you start this process. Absolutely. So that's where we are right there, okay? All right. Good. Nazimashi. And we actually left off last time on unhealthy attachments. Now we're talking about, you know, having a clean slate when you get into marriage. You don't have the baggage from the past, and you have to admit, when you carry this old baggage from the past, you're going to have guaranteed problems in your marriage. You have to know how to release those baggages, release those voices, release those tendencies to follow some old traditions, old cultural norms that really didn't work for you then, but certainly don't work for you now, all because that's what you used to do, and you're real familiar with that. Yeah, so you don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. So that's where we left off today, for sure. Unhealthy attachments. All right? Okay. Yeah, now, the reason a lot of people, you know, hold on to these old voices and voices, sometimes from their old parents tell them what to do and not to do, is because of, you know, they feel they might, you know, be abandoned. Even though, you know, you're old and so forth, you think by leaving those traditions that you're some kind of way that the mother's going to abandon you, you know. So you gotta watch all these things. Clean up before you start anew. Okay, that's real, real super important. All right. Now I repeat this also. I talk about childhood a lot in this series because it's very important to look at how you were brought up, look at how your spouse was brought up. That will tell you a lot about the person, also tell you what they're going to carry or not carry into the marriage, okay? And I don't know anybody who's lived with, you know, really healthy family models. You know, a loving father, you know, to you, loving husband to, you know, your mother, vice versa and so forth, where you saw them being loving toward one another, so you know how to have a healthy, loving, compassionate marriage yourself. See, so it's real important to, you know, to have this. If you didn't have it, we have to create ourselves. And that's what my book teaches you how to do, is to create these experiences that you never had, so you can have some way of knowing how you're going to operate in your own life. Yeah. That's very important. That's very important. You see, yeah. So looking at childhood, if children don't live with healthy family models, see, they will never internalize healthy family ideals. You see, we all manifest what we have been exposed to in our immediate environment. Whatever is experienced in the household is considered normal on one level or another. Or we take the other end of the spectrum and adopt a counter-dependent personality and shut out everyone. We talked about that last week. We don't always accept misbehavior consciously. Mm-mm. But on the subconscious level, there is an area of acceptability. See, we also tend to consciously or subconsciously want to correct the wrongs we experienced. Hear this now. But in going this route, we're concentrating so much on what we don't want that we forget to focus on what we do want for ourselves. And as the law of attraction dictates, again, we draw unto ourselves that which we habitually allow to dominate our consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope you heard that. Always focus on what you do want, not what you don't want, you know? Yeah, that's very, very important. Very, very important, you see? So, you know, healthy, balanced relationships, yeah, are wonderful, attainable, and to be desired. Don't say, look, that's only in Hollywood, that's only on the old Cosby show, if I can get somebody to I can get along with somebody, that'd be okay. Look, do not settle, do not compromise. If it's not right, don't do it, stay single. That's right, healthy, be healthy first. Be okay by yourself, be okay in your own skin. Yeah, real important. And as you feel fine by yourself, Watch, you'll start attracting others who feel fine by themselves, and y'all attract, you know, to one another. And that will be your mate. Now, you don't want anybody that's clingy onto you, that's codependent, you know, and all that. You don't want that. It doesn't work. It doesn't last long. It's not healthy. Relationships in which mutual respect, compassion, empathy, and support for healthy, independent mindsets is a great ideal to have. But, unfortunately, not one that has been supported by our current dysfunctional culture. Mm-hmm. You see, a healthy need for other people is fine, but to allow your self-worth to be determined in reaction to other people is giving power away and setting yourself up to be a victim. We all have worth. Yes, you do. Yes. If no one validated you, look, let me validate you. You're a fine, upstanding, special creation of God. God has said that when he created you, he threw away the mold. He had a mold that had just your name on it. Excellent mold. Yeah, that's right. So don't ever allow yourself to tell yourself otherwise. Don't allow other people to tell you otherwise. No. We all have worth as a unique creation, and God has deposited in all of us a special talent that is to be acknowledged, nurtured, and conditioned. Mm-hmm. It is like a plot of fertile ground. God has planted the seeds already, but we have to first acknowledge those planted seeds, tend to the surrounding soil with care on a regular basis, reap the harvest for ourselves and others, and start the process all over again. Mm-hmm. So, here's a classic unconscious thought of a codependent. Well, since I do not love myself, there must be something wrong with whoever else loves me. So, who needs somebody like that anyway? But if they turn away from me, then I have to win them back to prove that I am lovable. End quote. Isn't that sad? See, this is a way of sabotaging relationships as the come close, go away game continues. Come close, go away. You know? On some level, we are trying to earn the love of our unavailable parents to prove to ourselves that we are worthy and lovable. Or in some kind of way, see, trying to rectify our child-parent relationship by acting out in this dysfunctional manner. See, either way causes more hurt, disappointment, and despair. Y'all got that? Yeah, so many times when you get into marriages, you want to correct, need to be corrected in childhood between you and your parents. That's right, you know? When you look at your wife, you're looking at your mother and saying, you know, you are wrong for doing me like you did before. I'm going to fix you. Then here comes the emotional or sometimes physical abuse. Yeah, you're not attacking your wife, you're attacking your mother. Yeah, that happens a lot, you know. That's why we have to look at the difference between love, you know, true healthy love that only God has designed for us, and toxic love. Toxic poison love. I'm going to give you a list here. Okay? Healthy love. Development of self as first priority. Toxic love. Obsession with relationship. Hear that? Okay, number two. Healthy love. Room to grow. Expand. Desire for other to grow. Toxic love. Security, comfort in sameness, intensity of need seen as proof of love may really be fear, insecurity, and or loneliness. Three, healthy love. Separate interests, other friends, maintain other meaningful relationships. Toxic love, total involvement, limited social life, neglect old friends and interests. Micromanage them totally. Woo. Four, healthy love. Encouragement of each other's expansion. Secure in own worth. Yeah. Toxic love. Preoccupation with others' behavior. Fear of other changing, other person changing on you. Yeah, that person's real insecure, does that. 5, healthy love. Appropriate trust. Trusting a partner, a spouse to behave according to, trusting a spouse to behave according to accepted healthy standards, as both of you have subscribed to, you know. If you're Muslim, you know, you got standard that only Allah has in there for you, you know. But agreeing, all right, to accepted healthy standards. Toxic love, jealousy, possessiveness, fear of competition, okay? 6, healthy love. Compromise, negotiation, or taking turns at leading, problem solving together. Yes. Toxic love, power plays for control, blaming, passive or aggressive manipulation. Healthy love, embracing each other's individuality. Toxic love, trying to change the other one to their own image. Happens all the time. Healthy love, relationship deals with all aspects of reality. Toxic love, relationship is based on delusion and avoidance of the unpleasant. Healthy love, self-care. Self-care by both partners. Emotional state not dependent on others' mood. Self-care, hear that? Toxic love. Expectation that one spouse will fix and rescue the other. Oof. Man, that's so true. You want the spouse to fix you. A lot of times people get married for that. The brother says, I can fix her. I'm a married. I can fix her and bring her up to speed. She might say, he's kind of run down now, but I can fix him. I can mold him into shape. Happens all the time. 10, healthy love. Loving detachment. Healthy concern about the spouse while letting go. Loving detachment, okay? Keep in mind, loving. Toxic love. Fusion. Being obsessed with each other's problems and feelings. Yeah, yeah, control is all in there too. Loving. Healthy love. Sex is a free choice growing out of caring and friendship. Free choice, yes, 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 yes. Toxic love, pressure around sex due to insecurity, fear, and need for immediate gratification. No one should be pressured, even in marriage. You should, you know, that's close to rape. Yeah. Healthy love, ability to enjoy being alone. I was saying it before. You know, be fine by yourself first. Don't be insecure that you got to have somebody right there or you don't feel right, you know? Toxic love, unable to endure separation. Clingy. Remember I said that before? You don't want anybody that's clingy to you all the time. Just can't let go. All right? The last one, healthy love. Cycle of comfort and contentment. Toxic love, cycle of pain and despair. You know? So that's 13 right there. All right. So I hope everybody got that. By the way, you know, a lot of people listening right now, and if you want to ask a question, you can just push number 1 on your telephone and we'll bring you right on live switchboard. Okay? All right. If we can start seeing marriages not as a goal, but as opportunities for growth, then we can start having more functional marriages. Not dysfunctional. Functional marriages. A relationship that ends, you know, committed relationship, you know, I say committed relationship or marriage, that ends is not a failure or a punishment. See, you should not go into an internal cloud of depression thinking that you are a failure as a person. No. It is a lesson, and the main lessons you will encounter in life. See, as we learn from our many experiences, We evolve ourselves into better, wiser individuals, ready and more equipped to deal with the next encounter. See, we're learning. I think it's a learning experience. You know, if you've been married through, look, I've been married four times. I'm on my fourth wife right now, and it's heaven, paradise. You see, and it's not, you know, a bad, you know, stain on you if you've done that. You've been married a couple of times, and now you feel, oh, I can't figure it out. I'm going into depression. No, it's a learning lesson. You fall down, you just get up, but you learn from the accident. You learn from what you went through. You don't say you're a terrible person. You can't get it right. Well, we're all learning, okay? I'm learning. I wrote this book, 412 pages. You know, I've counseled. I've spent 20 years as a mental health and drug counselor. You see? Yes, yes, yes. I've been trained and I've been through relationships. But do I have all the answers? No. I'm learning. I got a lot of answers, but there are a lot more answers that I am to get. And a lot of times I get answers from this show right here as I read and I talk and I discuss with people, talk to the pioneers who have done it for 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Yeah. So I'm always learning, and that's how we should be, always in a learning mode. You see, that's very, very, very important, you know. And don't accept codependency. Don't accept it. No, it should not be part of your vocabulary of acceptance at all. You know? So we shouldn't go that route. Not at all. Okay, we're going to talk about codependency. Matter of fact, but right now, I think there's a small little break for identification. Stay right there for just 2 minutes. I didn't hear anything. Anyway, we're back. We're back. Oh, there was some kind of ID that had to go on right then. But anyway, I hope we're still there. All right, very good, very good. Tune right in. Okay, codependency. Now, we first learned about the term codependency from the 1987 publication of Melody Beatles' book called Codependent No More, along with countless articles on the subject. Okay, the term dysfunctional families was discussed in Dr. Salvador Mumichin and Herman Charles Fisherman's book called Family Therapy Techniques in 1981. So these terms are relatively new on the scene. Before 1981, we didn't have these types of discussions about adults addicted to substances and then their counterparts being addicted to them. And both of them depended on the ill behavior of one another. You see, that's one thing about that. When you got a dysfunctional, sometimes you have people who are married, and they're married a long time, and they're still dysfunctional. Argue and this and that. And they could be drinking or not drinking, but they're dependent on each other's ill behavior. Yeah, yeah, it's so sad. And when they have children, the children come up like that, you know, cursing by the time they're in the kindergarten. You know, they got a lot of things going on. You see, one person's playing the enabler. And please, sisters, if you're in that situation, don't do it. I don't care how much his brother says he loves you and provides for you. If he needs help, get him help. But don't accept the role of being the enabler, holding the person up, all because of an image, or all because he's physically providing. He's not providing the emotional support you need to have. No, 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 no. See, the enabler, please don't do this. The enabler is the one who makes excuses for, covers up for, lies for, and denies for the other abusive codependent partner. You know? The enabler satisfies a need because their actions foster a need from the other person in the relationship. They need a sense of security, the appearance of a happy family, food provided, bills paid, and a seemingly safe environment. Remember, seemingly safe environment. The mate can make all these ideals come true, or so it seems. Her home seems secure since no one has threatened the household and no family member has been harmed. Now, when in public, the family members can all smile and take cute pictures together. Oh, yeah, they can do all that. They always have food in the pantry. Bills are paid, or eventually. So you see, our enabling wife is fulfilling a need she has always had. Her enabling has now become justified, and everyone in the family is conditioned to play out some codependency role in order to survive. The ongoing matter in a codependent home is to avoid conflicts and problems and to make excuses for destructive or other hurtful behavior. See, don't do that. I've seen so many times the sisters, well, sometimes the brothers too, most of the time it's the sisters doing this. You know, you stay in a relationship and it's not good for you. It's not good. And what model, you know, what example or what message are you sending to the children? Not good. Not good. See, fear is a dominant emotion in the codependent home. That's what's going on. The reason the enabling wife makes a strong effort to make no waves with the abusing mate is because of the fear of reprisal. The fear of the other person hurting her in some other way, hating her, destroying the nice family image that she has curated, berating or belittling her in front of the kids, and of course, the ultimate, physical abuse. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is happening in religious communities, all communities. It doesn't matter which label you have. Believer, disbeliever, Christian, Muslim, it happens all the time. The brothers, sometimes sisters, they feel they, you know, bottom line, they got to lay it on them physically, you know? Boy, I'm telling you. So it's so important, you know, to really know that your body is God's temple. God's temple should never be harmed. When you marry, the other person is a part of your body, like another arm or another leg, whatever. You wouldn't hurt your own arm. So don't even think about hurting your spouse. Don't even think about it. Don't think about it. As a counselor, I've had so many stories from, women, you know, with these codependent stories. I said, man, what on earth? You know, in my mind, I'm saying, why on earth are you with this person? You see? Yeah. And their mind is fear and safety and all that, what the person is doing for them. You see? And it's pretty bad. So I'm going to relate a story to you, but you know, keep in mind, I'm doing all this to let you see that it's important to have a healthy, healthy, independent thinking mindset. You see? Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're thinking about getting married, don't have this need in mind. I need to have a husband. I need to have a boy. You need to have God. Yeah. Find security in that and be okay by yourself first. Yes. Go out to art museums and science exhibits by yourself. Love it. Go out to eat. Have a good time. And you will attract health. See, the healthier you get, the more healthier vibrations you put out there that will attract the mate who's also healthy herself or himself. Yeah, you want a healthy mate. So you can have a healthy marriage. Absolutely. Don't settle. Don't compromise. Let me share a story here. I got a lot of stories. I'm going to share one with you here. You know, I've heard many sad stories from friends and clients who have succumbed to codependency. Don't do it. Now, Mary, we call her Mary. change all names here naturally. Mary was married for 20 years to her husband, who was in the army. She suffered from mental, emotional, and physical abuse for most of the marriage. He was an alcoholic, and when he came home, he struck fear into the entire household. She was a stay-at-home wife with three children. Mary said she loved her husband very much and knew that he really didn't mean all the things that he said to her and their kids. And he also did not intend to hurt her as he did on a regular basis. Okay? She said that he was just stressed on the job and he was tired when he came home. Mary tearfully said, "Well, he doesn't know what he is saying or doing half the time." She was always bragging on his military accomplishments and accolades from his superior officers. She beamed with pride as she described how wonderful he was. When I asked her why she was taking so much abuse and not doing anything to stop it or reporting the abuse to authorities, she simply said that she could never do that. She loved her husband. She liked to sing and had a beautiful voice. And when she occasionally went out with him or without him and sang in public, she received a lot of attention and praise. When she arrived home, he jumped on her again for flirting or for thinking that she was somebody. Here comes another beat down. Mary said that she did report him one time to authorities in the military as they stayed on the base. She said that they would take note of the report, asked her what she did to provoke him. And then he later found out about that and jumped on her again, beat her down. She then was more and more terrified of him as he told her that she would never be able to get rid of him. Never. And if she tried, she would be in trouble one way or another. He put a fear in her for sure, in her consciousness. She eventually did leave him after he started beating up on the kids. See, mothers, can take it themselves, but when the kids start getting beat up, then they do something a lot of times. Yeah, I've seen that too before. Up until that point, he had only focused the physical abuse on her. When he started beating them up, then she became motivated to take the kids and leave. Isn't that something? I just can't imagine being with someone that long and suffering that kind of abuse on a regular basis and remaining sane. Boy. So what happened? She moved to another city, to a relative's home, thinking that she and her kids would be all right. She had been tortured for so long and had been told that she would never be rid of him so many times that she actually internalized that programming. Now, hear it out. Hear this. We're important. She internalized the programming. Please hear this. She really thought that he was influencing people around her to be mean to her. Remember, another city entirely. This included people at her new job, the bus driver passing her by as she waited on the corner for a ride to work, strange calls she was receiving, and even a homeless man she found in a yard one day. Isn't that something? Her husband died a couple years after she moved, so you would think that she would start some real healing and recovering, right? You think she would, start a new path for herself, you think? Well, she said that even though he was dead and buried, he still had influenced many people in her environment to still harass her. Think about that. This man's gone dead. But in her consciousness, his spirit is still there and influencing other people around her to harass her. You see? Even when new people, gave her a hard time, she still insisted on blaming her now dead husband for the ill treatments. Her dead husband. Think about it. She never went through a divorce because she said that she could still get financial benefits from the military. Ask her if there were no benefits, would she divorce them then? Would she divorce him then? And she says no. She felt that God would somehow blame her, or she would lose favor with God if she divorced her abusing husband. Now, this story might seem real extreme to many of you, but the fact is that this kind of dysfunctional marriage happens all the time. This woman had allowed herself to be victimized, brutalized, berated, belittled, made to feel less than a human, and brainwashed into believing that he was going to control her even after he was gone. Whew. Man, isn't that something? Boy. Programming. Well, there are many marriages that don't go to such an extreme, but still suffer the ill effects of codependency. See, anytime you're in a marriage where you cannot grow as the independent spirit of God because your partner likes you just the way you are, then you are a codependent. Just the way you are, boy. Just the way you are is being blindly submissive to them, covering up their faults, making them look good in the public eye, and basically doing what you are told. Isn't that true? Whoa. In the abusing, controlling mind, the thought is to the submissive codependent, quote, don't care too much about yourself. Don't listen to others when they want you to follow their dreams. I am the only authority in your life. Don't you forget it. Remember, your way is my way and my way is my way. Y'all heard that before? Neither person grows and develops themselves. The dominant one is so blinded by his or her own fear and arrogance that they cannot see that they're only stopping themselves from achieving any real meaning in life. And the submissive one never takes the time necessary to find out what their internal spirit is really all about. Isn't that something? Woo! Remember, you know, if you're listening right now, you can always chime in. I push number one on your phone, and I'll bring you in, and we can have a nice discussion about this. See, we're trying to really get you know, everybody out there to internalize good, healthy traits. Clean up the past. Clean the past up. You know, you got all these. You know, if you know, sisters might have voices in the past saying, "Well, just marry brother with some money. As long as you got money and willing to take care of you, then he's a good candidate for you, girl. Go and get one of those CEOs. All right. And if you're programmed like that, you wind up getting one, and he treats you so badly, you don't get out of it because you hear those voices. Girl, you better stay with somebody who's got some money. You're going to have a miserable life. A miserable life. You don't want that. You should have fun with your mate. Have fun. You know, love your mate. Have fun together. You see? So you don't want to be a codependent. Don't want it. You see? Yeah. Now, unfortunately, the classic codependents are attracted to the very people who eventually abandon them. Not just the physical types of abandonment, but more so the emotional type. The unavailable is common. Mm-hmm. When they are abandoned, they feel that their low self-esteem and low self-image of themselves is now confirmed. They tell themselves, why would anybody of substance be with a loser like myself? If they had any sense, they would leave. Isn't that something? Oof. What kind of self-talk is that? But going back to the law of attraction, it says, whatever you think about, you bring about. And you are ruled by your most dominant thought. Don't do it. Be on the side of righteousness. Be on the side of love, compassion, and you know, where you feel good. You see? that's really important. That's really important. You know. Yeah, yeah. How can you expect to have a healthy, balanced emotional foundation when you learn from parents and others in your environments that were themselves wounded children from wounded parents? Yeah. Yeah, like my own mother. My own mother didn't know how to give emotionally. I was emotionally starved and abandoned as a kid. But she came from 13 kids in the South. You know, they're put in the fields. The boys are put in the fields, and the girls are in the house. And their own parents didn't know how to connect with them emotionally, so she didn't know how to connect with us. To this day, you know, she still doesn't know how to connect emotionally. So I had to get mine in some, another kind of way, you know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 for sure. I went through 12 steps, and I found some pioneers. You know, I started creating my own healthy mother inside of myself. I attached myself to that healthy mother image. I found some pioneers in the California who are doing it correctly, and I attached myself to the spirit, the characteristics that they had. So, yeah, this is what I want. So I started putting together my own parental figures. I put together my own mother. I put together my own father and my brother. Okay, here we go. Yeah. My book helps you do this. So please get reconnected. This book here, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child. So please get this. Real important. Real important. You know? Yeah. You see? So, you know, I wrote this book to help everyone who's interested in improving their lives by going back in time, becoming a mentor to your child self. You know, it's real important. You know? It's critical for us to examine our patterns of behavior and thinking, connecting those current patterns to our childhood experiences. Like I said before, you know, you plan to get married, go to your fiance's family reunion, talk to the grandparents, they'll tell you the truth. Yeah, yeah, for sure. You got to know what you're dealing with. That's real important. See, we can undo the emotional results of the past by becoming the mentor to your child self. You can do all those. Yeah, so it's real important, you know. So what you're doing, you're creating your own a new virtual family experience, and that's what I did. You can change anything that you want to change. You can write a new script for yourselves. Yeah, thus creating new, exciting, healthy patterns of thoughts and behavior. You can do all that. That's real, real important. All right, everybody got that? Now, that's so important. So I was talking in the past, just 2 weeks, about unhealthy attachments and addictions. Another thing, too. A lot of times people are addicted to their emotions. And emotions create this adrenaline rush in their brain, you know, like a high. It really is a high. You see? That's why a lot of people like drama. They get high from the drama. You know? If you got a spouse that's easily agitated or easily excitable, red flags, this might not be the spouse for you. You see, you might be addicted to his emotions. So when someone is addicted to their emotions, that is the first priority in their life, their only emotion, not you, not even God. Yeah, 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 yeah. So you can't let ego or your emotions become your God. That's what you do. You don't want that. Don't want that. All right. Now, as you regulars know, I was going to the personal growth areas in the book, bounding on them as it relates to marriage. I just talked about unhealthy relationships. Okay? Now, in the past, this is part 12. In the past series, we start with the forgiveness, went through validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills. You spend a lot of time with that one. Optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, attachments and addictions and codependency, and we just finished that one. Now we're looking at recovery. You know, 12 principles of recovery. It's not just for, you know, I talk about this all the time, not just for drug addicts, but this is very good for those who have messed up and who hasn't messed up. You know, you have a history of messing up and maybe run over people emotionally, controlling people, and you want to straighten up. You want to straighten up. You want to be right in God's sight. Huh? So you got to stop listening to the lower self. You got to start listening to the higher self within you. That's why these 12 principles, you know, I pick them, you know, very carefully, are very, very apropos. They fit the discussion we're having now on marriages, improving, repairing, and preparing for marriages. Okay? All right? So I'll go through them. First principle, we allowed our lower selves to control us regarding our addiction. I'll say addiction to your emotions, or addiction to controlling, or addiction to abusing. Yeah. And admitted that our lives thus have become unmanageable. You see? Now, first, you allow, but now, it allows your lower selves to control you, but you admitted that your life is now unmanageable. So now you're saying, okay, God, I need some help. I've had two marriages, and I beat the first one up, and I almost killed the second one. I need some help. I don't want to go through another one like this, like the past. I need some help, God. So I'm ready now. I'm ready for you to cleanse me with your detox so I can have, or so I can be the candidate for a healthy, happy, you know, godly marriage. I'm ready now. You see? That's what first principle is saying. Yeah, for sure. The second one, we believe that Almighty God, the power greater and outside of ourselves, can and will restore us to sanity. Okay? So, you're ready to let Almighty God, you know he can do it. Because, you know, it's insane to be abusive. When you're beating them on your wife or beating them on your husband, it works both ways, you know. That is a temporary state of insanity. You're going to inflict pain. You're going to actually punch someone out, break the nose, break the jaw, black eye, pull the hair, and pull them down the hall by the hair, knock them down the stairs. That's not a human being doing that. That's an inhuman human being doing that. No. No. You've lost your human car when you do that. You're possessed at that point. You're insane. You see? So this second principle addresses that. Yeah. You're ready to stop all that once and for all. You stop it. You have a history of all this stuff because you saw havoc in your own childhood. Mother and father went at it a lot. So you want to break the cycle and have God clean you up. Okay? And number three, it says, we made a decision to submit or will surrender entirely and have your life, you want to submit your lives to the will of Almighty God. See? Yeah. Now, a lot of these are kind of blended together, but it's important to separate them because they have a different kind of focus. Okay? Four says, we made a searching and fearless emotional inventory of ourselves. Yeah. Things like procrastination and so forth and selfishness. Those things are not good for marriages. So in this process, you're going to make a list. That means you got to be truthful. List of what's lurking inside, what's hanging out inside of you, or what is a part of you. If it doesn't work for a healthy marriage, you throw it out. Now I'm just listing the principles right now. We're going to take time, one at a time, to go through this. This will probably take the next 2 months to do this. Next one, we admitted to God and to ourselves the exact nature of our wrongs. Okay? Yeah. You admit it. You know, admit that you got problems. You broke that girl's jaw, you know, in your last marriage. Admit it and ask for forgiveness. You see? Number six, we are entirely ready after asking God for right guidance to have God remove all our defects of character. Okay? Yeah. Well, all the defects of character out. That's real important. You don't want to hold on to any of those things. Out. Yeah. Number seven. We humbly and submissively ask God to remove all our shortcomings. You see, a lot of these are blended and kind of, you know, they're related. But there's a little different energy to them. You'll see as we go through this. All right? Very important. Eight, we are to make a list of all people we have harmed and we are ready to make amends to them all, if you can, you know. Make a list of people you've run over. Because it's important, because I'm telling you, when you don't do this and you want to get married, you're going to bring those same character defects, those same, you know, flaws, you know, and the unreconciled memories into your marriage. And that's going to affect your marriage guaranteed. Guaranteed. You see? 9, we intend to make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would bring harm to them, ourselves, or others. Yeah, yeah. When you can actually make amends to somebody, say you're sorry. You know, that does a lot for you. That takes a strong spirit to do that. Yeah. That means if you messed up in the marriage, you got no problem saying you're sorry there, and you know, and you know, wives like to hear that. Husbands do too. It works both ways now. Now, because those negative defects come back in even after you've gotten rid of them, we have to, in number 10, continue to take personal inventory. See? And when you're wrong, probably admit it. So when procrastination comes in, selfishness, ego, all that comes in, you got to, oh, man, I messed up again. Man, I'm so sorry. Boy, let me get rid of this again. So you got to constantly keep guard on what slips in, okay? Yeah. 11, we seek through prayer, meditation, and studying God's way to improve our conscious contact with God and to improve our love and respect of God, praying for the power to carry God's will out in our lives. You want to transform life. Transform life. You know, God says in Scripture, the pure for the pure, the impure for the impure, right? Right? And a wife, she wants the best husband. Husband, he wants the best wife. And when you go through this, you want God to really, you know, detox you. You pray, you meditate, you're studying God's way. You're looking to improve anything that you can, anything and everything that you can within yourself. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's good for a marriage. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's important. You know, that's important. Oh, the last one. Have increased our level of faith in God consciousness as a result of applying these principles. We are carrying this message to humanity, and we begin practicing these principles in all our affairs. So you want to be an example. You know, once you got down like that, you want to be an example. You know, like I'm doing now. Here I went through 3 other marriages, and I'm a promoter of happy, healthy, fun marriages. I'm doing it right now. So I'm operating in this 12th principle right now. You do the same thing. Yeah. You know, be a promoter of this. Be a promoter. Okay? So like I said, we're going to go into this one at a time. And we'll start with the first one, okay? Go into some detail. We allow our lower selves. Now, let me talk about that lower selves, you know? When you are lying, conning, getting over on somebody, you know, you're operating from that lower self. You see? And that's where all that, you know, called it, you know, the devilment comes from. So we say you allowed your lower selves to control you regarding your addiction, unhealthy attachments, and admitted that your life thus had become unmanageable. You see? Yeah, you got to admit. If you're a mess, say you're a mess. If you want to clean up, then say, I'm ready, God, for you to clean me up. I'll be your willing, worthy co-pilot, willing, worthy assistant in this process. Yeah. See, you cannot go about your daily routine without giving conscious thought to your thoughts and your self-talk. I talk about this all the time. You got to watch what you say to yourself. Yeah. Every thought we think and every word we speak creates our future. They create energy, yeah, that either helps us or hinders us in our life pursuits. It said, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. Well, either you consciously control your mind or someone or something else will. Now, you're not part of this. You're not part of this. You're only powerless when you give up control to something or someone else and you have no other options. You're not powerless. You see, the intent in what I'm doing right now is to investigate the language we're accustomed to using with ourselves. What are you saying with yourself? See, I'm telling you, you got to plant seeds in your subconscious because that's where everything happens. That's the pilot. You think the conscious part is your pilot? No. It's the unconscious part. That's the pilot. So what are you saying consistently about yourself? Ask yourself that. What are you saying consistently about yourself? Yeah, that's very important. Very, very, very important. You know? If you say you're powerless, you're powerless. You know? You always have the power to choose what you listen to, and as long as you know your options, and there is hope. You see? All right. Now, we have different voices within calling us to do different things. We have our higher self that influences us only to do the right thing. Yeah. This could be given to a charitable cause or being more compassionate and loving and fun. This could also be the best balanced example as a husband or wife, treating your spouse in the best, excellent way. Yeah. Before responding, we should think first about this action being favorable in God's sight, knowing that we are constantly being monitored by His divine security cameras. I say this all the time from audiences. High self-esteem and self-image would naturally fall in this category. Okay? Yeah, yeah. You could be thinking the best about yourself, knowing that God knew exactly what He was doing when He created you. Remember the excellent mold He put you in. And knowing that God has chosen you for His divine plan on earth. Now, what can we keep in mind as a baseline for knowing what self we are listening to? Oh, here it comes. Look at the outcome. What is produced from the action being taken? Influences from our higher self only produce life-giving results. Only. So, when you are influenced by your lower self, you experience the darker side of life. Y'all hear me out there? Voices from this self are constantly telling you to overlook the healthier ways of operating. Please hear that. The ways of the lower self have created its own culture and standards that are influencing you to adopt as your own. Yeah. These whispers and subtle suggestions can influence you to get what you need at any cost, disregarding the consequences and feelings of others. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Hope you got this. You know, like the law of the land means nothing. The feelings of others mean nothing. Solid, healthy traditions mean nothing. Your own health and well-being mean nothing. Remember, it's all over self. God is just the word. Logic and practical thinking are anomalies in this world. Hear that? Whispers and subtle suggestions. The only item that matters and takes a dominant position is what's in it for me. What good feeling can I get out of this? Can I see myself as elevated in stature or high regard in the public eye? Whew. Is my political position safe? Can I get a financial gain regardless of the side effects from this process? Can my ego be fed? My idea of superiority kept alive. Woof. Oh, this is something. Now, for the classic codependent, we have justify my enabling codependent behavior by accepting this voice telling me that I am not worth anything on my own and that my worth is measured in my service and strict obedience to others without question. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Well, it should be clear now that addictions come under the category of standards emanating from the lower self. Remember when I said addiction, unhealthy attachments, like we're talking about before there, you know? All that, you know, controlling issues and abusing issues. Yeah. Abusers, you know, the abusing spirit, they're all self-serving and never life-producing. See, addictions and that kind of controlling behavior eventually lead to destruction in some form or another. Yeah. See, it takes different forms, such as spousal abuse. Remember I thought about that? Yeah. Abusive personality and demeanor. Sometimes just emotional abuse. If you beat somebody down with your words, you ain't nothing. You ain't gonna never be nothing. Look at you. Nobody wants you but me. I'm a fool to have married you in the first place. You'll be nothing. You'll never be nothing. Without me, you'll be nothing. You'll be homeless out there. You'll be tricking. All kind of mean things that, you know, that has been said. You see? Yeah. See? So, now when we take the first step of admitting that we made the wrong choice in allowing our lower self to dominate our thinking, we have started to open the door to recovery. See? Yeah. I mean, if you've done these things, it's not, you know, you're not lost forever. You just had a bad experience. There's always a way for you to redeem yourself. Always time. As long as you're alive, there's a time for you to redeem yourself. Yeah. There is true salvation in acceptance of personal responsibility to create the life that you want. Admitting is very hard to do. Yeah, a lot of us don't want to do that, especially with us being brought up in a culture which has denial as its creeds. Ooh, my family is definitely right there with that one. They love denial. Many of us, myself included, have what the big book calls the X factor of addiction. You know about that? It's in your bloodstream. It's the unknown blood trait of addiction that can haunt us if you're allowed to do so. Yeah. So that's very important to understand that. I talked about that extensively in the addiction series I did before. I won't go into that. You know, the process of identifying weaknesses within involves a certain amount of emotional pain. You know, ask yourself, how are your parents? How did they deal with conflict resolution and how are they? Emotionally. When we look at our family history, we'll find out what lurks within us. You know, are they known to have a short fuse? Are they known for having patience? You see? Yeah. Did they always want to be right or have to be right? Anytime anything came up, they had to be right. You know? Yeah. So this is why support for our recovery is vital. You see? Yeah. So if you had any of these issues, you know, then you have to demonstrate empathy, love, and faith in God, and faith in your higher self. Knowing that God can deliver you. Yeah, that's real important. You know, the word unmanageability is a gross understatement in the addiction world, those who love to control people. Unmanageability is the accepted standard along with the denial. See, when we admit that our life has become unmanageable, we have to look at the two forms, social and personal. You know, social unmanageability involves ingesting the alcohol, drugs, or involvement of other abusive behaviors. Here, other abusive behaviors. See? I'm staying with my point. You know, I'm staying with the idea of this being a marriage or a series. I'm sure you can see the connection here. Other abusive behaviors. You know, when someone is drunk or otherwise inebriated or just full of rage, they obviously are unmanageable. When someone in their violent, possessive behavior state, their mind is in a state that is unmanageable. This state is only obvious to the observer and seldom to the addict, seldom to the person who's doing all this harm, to the abuser. You see? The abuser wonders why others have that viewpoint. Like, what's wrong with you? I'm fine. Even with extreme results such as car accidents and fatalities, many abusers wonder what causes by saying, who did this awful thing but me? They can't believe that they caused this havoc. They can't believe that the few drinks or the few fights did all this. They can't believe that their little annoyance at another driver on the freeway caused all this to happen. See, the abuser's perception filter is different from others. They don't perceive, you know, a fight or two to be a problem, or in the addict's case, a few drinks, you know, to be a problem. No. They don't perceive a few hits on a pipe or a heroin hit or a light argument with someone to be anything that deserves concern. No. They can handle it because they perceive themselves as bigger than the drug or adverse behavior. See how twisted they are? See how their mind is? Yeah. The addictions affect every area of your life. Yeah, controlling behavior affects every area of life. Every area. Relationships, marriages are destroyed, sabotaged, and affected very adversely. Jobs are affected by a loss of hours or quality of work. When the ugly results are obvious, eventually to the addict, the desire to do more of the destructive behavior increases. Why? Because they just don't want to face the realities of what they have done to themselves and others. Denial is easy when they are drunk, when they are enraged. Denial is easy when they can come home, abuse a person that they say they love, blame them for the negative consequences in their lives. Yeah. Denial is a wonderful place to be for the addict because they can blame someone or something else, thus relinquishing themselves of any responsibilities. Oof, you got something? Now, that's social unmanageability. Now, we're going to talk about personal unmanageability. Now, personal unmanageability relates to the attitudes and belief systems that we have accepted of ourselves and others around us. Our personalities have to be examined along with seeing which character defects are present that are contributing to our destruction. There are so many character defects, so many types, you know. But the most common one is self-centeredness. Heard that? You heard what they say? Self-centeredness. This one has to be present in order for the addiction to thrive. Now, immaturity is another one. Can I catch the idea now when I say character defects? Yeah, immaturity is another one. An addict may well function well when sober, but when they encounter the least agitation or disruption of the normal pattern, internal chaos begins. Mm-hmm. Now, at this stage, it's real important, okay? Now, immature is one. An addict may well function, okay? Very well and sober, but when they encounter the least agitation, internal chaos begins. Now, at this stage, the lower self is very active. Yeah, the lower self is very active and starts whispering suggestions and paints a different perception of events, which brings to the surface the addict's behavior. Yeah, the lower self. Oh, yeah, that's where the Satan, Shaitan, we say it. As Muslims say, it's very active right there. It starts whispering, you know, and paints a different perception of the events, which brings us to the surface the addict's behavior. Temper tantrums, fighting, overacting, blaming others are all examples of immaturity and are tools that the addict uses frequently. Now, these defects take different forms. Some are covert, some are overt. Some are displayed openly and some are played out within. The feelings of fear and inadequacy are two more defects that plague many addicts. Many feel that they're just not enough and therefore have to use to get the feeling that they're okay or they're abused. Use or abuse. All right, everybody getting this real important? This is so important to get. I'm telling you, if we just internalize these principles I'm talking about, this is a 12th installment of improving, repairing, preparing for marriages. 12th installment. If we just internalize and accept these principles I've been talking about for the past 12 weeks, I guess, in the subject, you know, we will automatically have better personal lives. And then, of course, you have better marriage, because what happens? You attract to yourself someone else with an improved personal life. Huh? Because what happens? You're vibrating on the same vibration. You're on the same vibration there. You see? Yeah. And then you have automatic better marriage, because both of y'all are in tune to the same wavelength. Yeah. Please hear that. Again, don't sell, don't compromise. Have to make this best for you. All right? Okay. All right. I'm not Z-Mushy in case I didn't do my identification enough times here, in case you didn't know that, in case you're calling and didn't really know who's talking. This is Nazim Abdul-Rashid, actually, author of this book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. Okay? Amazon, Barnes & Noble have it, and if you got an e-book or you got the Kindle or Nook, you can get it that way and download it for about $8, very, very cheap. The book costs about $20, 412 pages. Yeah. And get it. You know, and my site's called cloudsofabundance.com. Again, cloudsofabundance.com. One more time, cloudsofabundance.com. If you order it that way, if you're in the States, that is, then I'll actually autograph it and mail it personally. Now, if you're outside the States, and we have listeners that listen from outside the States, you have to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble to get yours. Or go to your local bookstore and they can order it, okay? And Barnes & Noble has this, they might have this on their shelf. So if you go in there and get it that way and ask for it, if they don't have it, they can order it, okay? All right, and my email, nrbookclub@gmail.com. Again, nrbookclub@gmail.com. nrbookclub@gmail.com. Okay, everybody got that? All right. Very important. I love to talk to you. You know, I love to talk to you. I know a couple of you have ordered the book already. I appreciate that. And please, you know, tell somebody else, because, you know, the more I can be supported in this effort, the more I can travel and take this called Reconnected Messages out to others in this country and beyond this country, so we can improve the world, remake the world, you know, and offer more tools for people and let people see the light within you. When you get information like this and you start beaming, man, let other people, make sure other people see that so they can get some of that too. You know, let the old saying go, I want some of what they have. You know, and be an example out there. Be an example. And when you go in store, you know, make sure people are smiling before you leave, the cashier, the clerk. Make sure they feel good because you're there. Lift their spirits up. Ask how they're doing. Tell them you recognize God within them. Yeah, you appreciate their service. Make them feel good. You see how it comes back to you. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, second principle is we came to believe that Almighty God, the power greater and outside of ourselves, could and would restore us to sanity. Like I said before, when you get beat up, and when somebody's beating somebody up, beating your spouse up, which I think is awful, that is a period of insanity. Insanity. Yeah. Ordering your wife around, ordering your husband around like they're just some slave or something. Insanity. So we got to believe that Almighty God, only God, will restore us to sanity. You know, give our mind back to us. We lost our mind. So to give our mind back to us, we can have our healthy mind again and live a nice, productive, positive life. That's very important. Live a nice, positive, productive life. You can have a nice, positive, productive marriage. So your marriage should produce something. It should be, it's like a factory. It produces something that the world needs. You see? Yeah. And of course, you know, the world needs love. Healthy, practical, balanced love. That's God approved. Okay? Real important. All right? I'm going to look at a little bit here, a little more. We're going to close the show real quickly. And by the way, before I close, you know, I would like to, you know, holler at you. So if anybody wants to come on the air and say a few things, you can, by just push number one on your telephone, and I'll say something to you. Okay? All right? In this principle right here, we're going to talk about faith. Faith is very, very important in the recovery process. See? Faith indicates a belief in the unseen. Now, believers, you all know this. And also, a belief in a power beyond our comprehension. A belief in a divine being that can rescue us from our lower self and our fallen human condition. A belief that the same divine being can and will make us aware of what he, okay, has already created in all of us. A belief that God alone has created within us our salvation, recovery, and complete fulfillment of our lives. Another scriptural quote there. Complete fulfillment of our lives. Yeah. That's very, very important for this. Very, very important for this. You see? This understanding shines a light of responsibility squarely on our shoulders. Instead of thinking that we are too weak to save ourselves and therefore we need someone or something else to save us. Y'all know how some people are. Yeah. Matter of fact, I have a sign in my office that says, "Nobody is coming. God sent you." You also write that down and put that on your door. Nobody is coming. God sent you. What are you doing with the gift God gave you? No one's coming to save you. Don't fall under that savior complex. You're so weak, you know, somebody's got to lift you up and save you. Save yourself. You see? Save yourself. You know? That's real important. You know, you might reflect on the words that, you know, a lot of black folks like to sing at funerals. Amazing Grace. You all know that song. You know that, right? The lyrics contain these words: "To save a wretch like me. To save a wretch like me." Mm-mm-mm. See, we sing the song and don't bother thinking about what we are affirming every time we sing those words. Who said you're a wretch in the first place, that you need to be saved? Why are you agreeing to call yourself a wretch in the first place? How does that build self-esteem and your positive self-image as God really wants for all of us? Huh? Many of us are satisfied playing the victim role or the incapacitated role because in this kind of position, we don't have to face taking responsibility for our life. This is comfortable and convenient. With this new belief and this principle here, we realize that what we can physically see and feel is not the real resource for us, but only an illusion. It is what we cannot see that is our saving grace. We have to believe that what we cannot see, which we relate to God, will restore our sanity to us. Sanity. Oh, yeah? Absolutely. Whew. There's a lot there. I'm going to close right down that point. We're going to have part 13 next week, same time, same station. And call in with questions and concerns and, you know, push number one and ask them questions and be a part of the discussions. We need to have enough tools so we can have a happy, healthy, fun-filled marriage. So people can, you know, they can see the light all around us when we walk down the street, going to the master, going to the, you know, houses of worship, going to the stores, going anywhere. You should have this big light around you. Love, compassion, and concern, accept responsibilities for your life, for the marriage, and for the, and be a real garment for one another. Okay? That's real important, you know? Have one of those back. Have fun. Do things together. You know, might play in a park together or go dancing together. Go do some fun things on a regular basis. You know, do that. Okay? All right. So I am Nazim Rashid, author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, with Improving, Repairing, and Preparing for Marriages, Part 12. And we're going to have Part 13 next week. So I close the show right now. I hope everybody enjoyed themselves, and I hope I wasn't talking too fast. I know I have a tendency to do that. So I hope and pray that you heard me clearly and correctly and that you got what I was trying to relate to you. And believe me, you know, only good comes from God. You know, bad comes from myself. So I'm trying to just deliver the message. That's all. Just deliver the message. All right, that's what I feel I'm called here to do. Just deliver the message. So with that, I'm going to end the show with only the peace that God gives to you. All right? Assalamu alaikum.